Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, starting in the spring, through the summer into the fall, she is here on the program and we talk about taking care of things in the home landscape. So it's your opportunity to ask questions about things that grow in the yard. Could be grass, trees, shrubs, vegetables, flowers. We also can talk about houseplants. Any and all of that is good. If you have a problem and you're not quite sure how to solve it, Sandy will do her best to give you some advice. Maybe you're thinking about what you might like to plant this year and you're looking for some suggestions. We can try and do that. If you have questions, you can call us 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So if you want to give us a call, you do that. Welcome back.
Good morning. Doesn't feel like spring, though, does it?
No, it really doesn't. Well, we have been running a little bit cooler than average, although I think the long-range forecast is saying by Friday we're talking about highs in the, well, in the 70s, I guess. So it'll feel a little bit warmer. And I think it's supposed to be pretty much dry and mostly sunny. So that's not so bad. If we can get through today, we'll be okay. I know you said that maybe people are a little bit concerned because it's been warm enough so that we have things flowering. We've got daffodils. I know in my yard there's tulips already. Hyacinth, they're sort of on their way out. They've already done their thing. And people are worried if we really do get a cold snap, and it is possible to still get frost.
Oh, sure.
I imagine they worry about the plants that are there and wonder, well, is there anything that I can do or should be doing?
And really, most of those early perennials, you know, daffodils, tulips, as well as even some of the earlier plants, early perennials that just start to sprout, most of those are really pretty cold tolerant. They'll take a frost, and it's really not going to damage them. If we started getting into the 20, you know, low 20s or something, then you might see a problem with the flowers, and it mainly would be the flowers that are out. And so those, you might, you know, just actually trim those off and or cut those off and bring them inside or something like that. But that's if we're really getting into the low 20s, it's probably when you're going to see a problem with that. But I was saying that really the wind is probably does more damage this time of year than anything. So let's hope the wind kind of backs down a little bit.
We have a caller. Let's talk with them in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Call there, line one.
There we
go. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
we got you. Go ahead.
Well, no, there's this music playing on the radio, very loud.
Okay, we'll see if we can get it. How about now?
No, organ music.
Organ music, that's interesting.
It's like Calliope's.
And do we have organ music going on the FM at the moment? No, Henry Frayne is shaking his head. He says no.
Okay, I'll try and call back.
Okay, do that.
Interesting.
We'll see if we can figure out what's going on. You know, sometimes odd things happen. Wires get crossed. Who knows? But it's not our intention to play music.
Ode to spring, maybe.
That's exactly right. Ode to spring. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Do give us a call if you have a question. Let's talk about, let me see, how about lawn treatment? Are we at the point where we can do that for springtime fertilization?
Well, and it really is that right now maybe be the time when people have problems with crabgrass. This is the time to really be thinking about putting on crabgrass control. And just remember that maybe you just have certain areas. You may not have to apply crabgrass control to your whole lawn. Usually it's like in certain areas you tend to have more crabgrass. But then I'd also think about maybe that's an area where you want to – this would be a good time to reseed lawns too. So you may decide that you want to reseed instead of doing your pre-emergent crabgrass control. And remember, you really can't do those two at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of decide on which one of those you want to do, but because you're always going to get weed problems whenever you have an open lawn, you know, where there's bare soil, weeds are going to come in. Yeah. So sometimes just thinking about doing some good lawn maintenance practices, if you've had problems with compaction, thatch, this would be a good time to be thinking about doing the core aerifying. We actually take cores out of the soil, and that's really very helpful for those kind of problems, compaction and thatch. So that'd be a good time to think about that. We are getting a little bit, you know, usually the 1st of May is when we think about really doing our first fertilization. That's one of the things that the U of I recommends is to wait just a little bit later for that. seem to have less leaf disease problems if we wait a little bit later into May. Okay. So that might be something to sort of keep in mind.
So, again, I want to make sure, because I'm thinking about doing this in one area myself, for starting from seed, starting grass from seed, is it too early to do that?
No. You can go ahead and do that. And this is a good time, because generally we start getting in, you know, it's the soil temperatures are warm enough, the seed should germinate well, and we should start getting into some regular rain, so you don't have to worry about watering so much. But the one thing to keep in mind is that you have to get the seed down in the soil. So just spreading it across the top of the grass if you're trying to overseed is not going to help you any. It's just really expensive bird seed. So don't do that. So if you are going to do some overseeding, usually it's going to require something like you can rent these what are called slit seeders. Mm-hmm. That actually puts a slit in the soil and then drops the seed in. And so somehow you have to make sure that that seed gets into the soil.
All right. Let's try again for some calls. We'll start with Urbana, line one. Hello.
Okay, that's much better.
Okay, very good. Sorry, I don't know what the problem was, but please do go ahead.
Drink.
All right.
Anyway, I ordered some mail order trees, and they came in bare root stock. Mm-hmm. And they said that they'd be fine if you put them in the shade for 2 weeks or so. And so we put them out to about 10 days. And anyway, we aren't ready to plant them in the yard yet, so we put them in like 5 gallon buckets and filled them with dirt and such. And then some of the ones that were stored had started to leaf out in the dark, and their leaves are very pale green. And I'm wondering about, like, did they get sunburned if I put them out, or do I have to do that gradually? And also, I know transplanting them twice is a horrible thing to do, but I don't know what else to do. And are there any tips you can give me on doing that?
Yeah, well, I think you really did the best thing, and I'm glad you brought this up, because this is that time of year, and I just got some plants yesterday, bare root. You're trying to figure out, okay, they always come midweek when you have any time to do anything with them. But you're absolutely right. The first thing to do is, generally what you want to do when you first get them in is you want to soak them for a while in water, because those bare root things have been sitting, and so usually we want to soak them at least for an hour or so, and even overnight. So that would be one thing for other folks. And then you did the absolute best thing is just to go ahead and plant them, put them in pots or whatever, just plant them, or you could heel them in another part of the garden or something like that if you really can't get to planting them in their permanent place at that time. So you did the absolutely right thing. I think you're on the right track too when you say, you know, that concern about those new leaves coming out, because they came out in these sort of semi-perfect conditions in that there wasn't any wind, there was obviously wasn't a lot of sun. So I'd think about putting them in the shade, something. I would not put them in direct light, even though it's not quite as bad as if it was later on in the summer. So I think you're on the right track. And they should green up. Sometimes they get kind of elongated and they don't look all that great, but they should go ahead and green up for you.
Okay. I'm kind of concerned that the roots are going to be root bound for a bit, because they had a lot of roots. We put them in 5 gallon buckets because it's the biggest thing
we had. Right. And you just kind of stuffed them in there.
Yeah,
they'll be fine because they really, because I assume you're just going to leave those in for, what, a few weeks at the most or whatever? Okay.
Yeah.
If you're just doing it for a few weeks, that's fine. That's really the best thing you can do at this point. And then once you get them out and start to put them in their permanent position, I think you'll find most of the soil will probably fall away. And then you can do the right thing with the roots, making sure that they're spread out and have the hole that's big enough for them so they can, spread them out.
Mm-hmm. You're happy. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. We'll go next to a caller here on line number 3, and they are in Farmer City. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Yes.
I live at it's not exactly rural, but I've got a nice big lot. One of the big things is that I've got mulberry trees in the fence rows, and I cannot kill those stupid things.
Yeah.
They just, like Lazarus, they just keep coming back. And tried Roundup, and I regularly, since they grow in the fence rows, leaves collect in the fall, I regularly just simply torch those leaves and hoping that they'll kill the mulberries, and they don't. These are the most fire-resistant mulberries I've ever seen. You can build a house out of these.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you get rid of these idiots?
Right. So when you're using Roundup, how are you applying it?
I usually mix it. Well, I have been mixing it according to the directions and just simply spraying it. Somebody told me to spray it on the leaves themselves, so I usually wait until the mulberry trees have leafed out, and I try to spray it on the leaves as quickly as they get leaves.
Right. Well, you may find it a little bit more effective, and this is on the label, what's called cut surface treatment. And you could actually, I know you may have a whole bunch of these, so maybe it'll be kind of time consuming, but what you do is you actually cut them off, and then you immediately paint on the Roundup concentrate. And then that gets right into the cambium and really generally works a little bit better for some of these harder to kill things. I'm not sure on mulberry, I'm not sure how, it may be semi-tolerant of Roundup, so you may find that maybe one of the other brush killers might be a little bit more effective for you on mulberry, but I would imagine probably cut surface treatment is going to be a little bit more effective for you, especially if it's got any size to the tree at all. And that's a good way to apply it in that you can be very careful about how you apply it. You know, you know, since you're putting it right on that cut surface and you're not spraying it, it actually is a good way to put it on.
Yeah. Is there any way to kill the roots? Because I actually have tried that, cutting them off and painting the Roundup on. And what it does is it does kill the tree that I painted it on, but then the roots spring up a new shoot.
Oh, another, yeah. Well, unfortunately, and because Roundup should be, it's a systemic, so it should be going into the roots, but on some of these woodier things, sometimes it's a little bit harder to do. That's why I'm not so sure. I in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that mulberry is one of those that doesn't always react all that well to Roundup, as in it doesn't necessarily control it completely. So I think you may find one of the other herbicides, like triclopyr or one of the other ones, maybe a little bit more effective for you. And that's usually sold as some of the brush be gone kinds of things. Okay. That are out there. So you may find that that's maybe a little bit more effective for you. And it sounds like this, you know, they've really gotten a hold here. And if there's any other mulberries around, you know, you're always going to get these little seedlings popping up too. So
yeah, that is definitely a problem.
Yeah.
More seedlings around. It's too bad they're not commercially viable. I would, you know, be able to make a million selling with them.
Actually, I have seen in some of the catalogs, they actually have made some selections for mulberries. They're pretty, I mean, as a kid, we always ate them.
Oh.
You know, they're pretty tasty, but
they are great.
Kind of messy,
they are great,
but
in pies and stuff like that. Yeah. You just don't want to have your laundry hanging out during.
Yeah, good point. The birds really help with that a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway,
sure do.
Good luck on that.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call. This morning here in this hour, Focus 580, it's our monthly program on lawn and garden care. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And if you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, I know she will do her best to help you out. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Chicago, line 4.
Hello. I still have my poinsettia from Christmas 2002, and this Christmas I was given some more poinsettias, one of which is really large. It's like 3 feet high and about a yard wide. And I'm going to make a... I know people think of nothing
sorry.
Poinsettia, but that's
it's a
okay.
Tree.
They're green. Anyway, I'm going to put them outside because I've seen flower beds of poinsettias where they grow like 4 feet high. And this might be too much to expect in the Midwest, but I want to know how soon could I put these monsters outside because they're taking up a lot of space.
Yeah, I bet you can't wait to get them outside.
How soon?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we're talking about mid-May. Probably.
You're
no, sorry. I mean, they are not frost tolerant at all.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, our last frost date, and even up there, we're probably talking May 20th and stuff probably for you before the actual, you know, don't have to worry anymore. Sometimes we stretch that a little bit and put them out a little bit
earlier. Like Memorial Day.
Well, you could probably do it maybe a little bit earlier than that, but it's, you know, I wouldn't put them out any earlier than mid-May, to be honest with you. So, yeah, you're going to have to hang on to them for another month.
But do you think it will work? Do you think they're going to just sort of thrive this summer? Or?
Oh, sure. They actually, and I've seen people do this, that they do very well outside. I mean, they love the heat. I mean, the warmer the better, and they love the heat, and they do real well. But it is one of those, obviously, toward the latter part of the season here, you're going to have to think about, you know, bringing them in. So
I'm going to let them die.
Oh, let them go?
Death.
Oh,
yeah.
That's actually, you know, sometimes I've done that, too. Just let them do a natural death, and that way you're not completely responsible.
People laugh when they see this poinsettia from 2002, and I really can't see carrying this on another year. So I think it would be better if it just sort of died outside.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I think that's fine. But no, they'll be fine. They'll look nice and green. And,
okay.
So yeah, sure.
I'm excited, but not till the mid-May.
Yeah.
Well,
hang
thank
on.
You.
All right, thanks for the call. Well, here, around here, I think the average date of last frost is around April 20-something.
Mm-hmm. So we're not even at the average.
So we're not even at the average.
At this point.
Do you know what it is for Chicago? I'm sure.
I would imagine. Yeah, usually they're later. Like 2 weeks later than we are. Uh-huh. So I would imagine, yeah, they probably are talking maybe mid, you know, end of May before they really don't have to worry about frost anymore, I'm guessing.
All right. Our next caller here is in let me see. Camargo? Okay. Yeah, we'll do Camargo. How about that's line number three. Let's do that. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a couple questions. First of all, did it get cold enough to damage the rhubarb?
I don't think so. And you can tell. You know, if you have rhubarb, you can just look
if
at the leaf.
It's soft and squishy.
Yeah, it should look. Yeah, yeah. If it looks like cooked spinach, not a good thing. And those, all you'd want to do is just cut those off.
Okay.
You know, put those in the compost pile. And then the new ones that come up will be just fine. So,
okay.
But it'll tell you.
As long as it's obvious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It'll tell you whether it was frosted or not.
My other question is, again, about bare root purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
I purchased several different things, one of which was Asclepias tuberosa butterfly weed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I did soak it for a few hours. It's a very fleshy root, and so I didn't want to soak it too long.
Right.
But it's been in a pot now for a couple weeks, and there is absolutely no sign of life.
Yeah, they are very slow to emerge. I don't. Do you have it inside then?
Yes. It's in a greenhouse, so it's a cool greenhouse, but still, it didn't get too cold.
Yeah, they are very slow to emerge.
Okay.
So hang on there, because if it felt, you know, you can usually tell with roots if they still feel like they're alive or not, then I wouldn't worry about it. They are slow, so slow. I mean, there's times when everything's up and I'm thinking this thing is never going to come up. And then they finally decide. So they must really need a lot of warmth before they take off.
I see.
So don't give up on it yet.
I'll hang in there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. Let's go to Bloomington, Illinois. This is the next caller, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Say, I got a couple of questions. One, like the packages of bulbs you see at like Walmart, like specifically the cana bulbs, as opposed to buying a plant, I've always bought a cana plant and they do well, but they're kind of expensive. The cana bulbs, will they emerge the first year, you think, when you buy them, like in those packages, you know, six for $8, is that?
Sure. I mean, they'll certainly emerge. I think probably what you're going to see is the ones that you buy that are already in the pots tend to be much bigger roots.
Uh-huh.
So you get a more vigorous plant. You might get several. You know, they actually have little stems on them or the little eyes where the stems are going to come out. And usually on the container ones or the more expensive one, you'll find that there's several shoots that will come up. Maybe on those other ones, you'll find there's only one shoot that comes up. So it's probably just a kind of a quality thing. And you just have to decide whether that's fine with you and you're going to put a bunch of them together and see what happens. And that might be one way to do it, sort of collect them in one spot. So I think that's what you're going to find. It's just the number of shoots and how vigorous they are is going to be different with the cheaper ones.
To put them in the ground?
Oh, it's too early. Yeah, yeah. All those things like cannas, caladiums, gladiolas, they really like warm temperatures, warm soil temperatures. You can certainly start them indoors.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people do that just to sort of get a head start. And there's nothing wrong with that. So you can start them indoors in pots and then they'd be ready to go. Yeah, and I'd really wait till mid-May before I'd put them outside.
Say, is there a shade shrub, not evergreen, but that doesn't lose its leaves in the winter? Is there such an animal that you could put in the shade and it would keep its leaves through the winter?
Yeah, there's some, actually, you know, even some of the rhododendrons will take some shade, and they're evergreen. Boxwoods will take some shade. Again, it kind of, if it's really, really dense shade, you may have trouble with both of those. As far as a lot of our evergreen plants like a certain amount of sun, at least some sun. So if you're getting like some morning sun, both of those plants would do just fine. I don't think you have a problem with that. I don't know. Beyond that, are you wanting any, you want things that are small, obviously?
Well, no, even bigger, like 4 or 5 feet.
Oh, okay. Well,
6 feet even.
Right. And, you know, even yews will take a certain amount of shade. Obviously, those will get bigger. Hemlocks will take shade. Again, those are going to get bigger, but you can do a certain amount of pruning on them to keep them smaller. So there are a few things. Unfortunately, a lot of the things like junipers and stuff just will not tolerate shade very well.
Say, another question on bare root. The same kind of package rose shrubs, maybe you've already addressed this, that you see at the home centers. Are those bare rooted in those plastic bags?
Right, right. There's usually just like peat moss or something around the roots.
Well, is that a pretty good way to go?
Well, it's kind of the same thing where we were talking about with the cannas, in that it's what you're going to find is they're not necessarily the best grade. The bare root roses are graded, and so they're not necessarily the best, as in sometimes the stems are smaller. Sometimes they don't have as many stems or as many shoots. So, again, it's kind of a quality thing, and sometimes you can be just fine on those. So it kind of depends on, you know, what level and how much you're willing to sort of help them along. If you're willing to sort of take some time with them and make sure that, you know, they're well watered and all that stuff, you may find that it's just fine with some of those.
But for a sure thing, spend the money and get a potted rose.
Yeah, you're better off going with some of the higher grades and making sure that they're growing and doing well.
You said they're rated?
Yeah, they're actually graded.
Graded on the package somewhere?
Right.
Is there the shrub rose, is that different from the hedge rose, the kind that you don't have to prune and it just kind of goes forever?
Yeah, shrub rose is kind of this big category where everything's kind of just been thrown in there. But yeah, they're kind of on that same line of what we would call the hedge, is probably just one of those kind of categories that ends up being a shrub rose. And the idea is that generally you would just let them grow and they get to a certain size. And usually it depends, again, on the plant, that may be 4 or 5 feet or bigger. We have some smaller ones now that tend to be more ground cover. So you kind of just have to really read and see what kind it is. But
for an amateur, is that the way to go?
I've had great luck with them, to be honest with you. I really don't. Once I get them going, I really don't do much for them over the wintertime. You have to do a little pruning in the spring, but generally they don't need a whole lot of care. They will have some problems with Japanese beetles more than likely, but beyond that, they usually survive that. They don't always look all that good, but.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. About midway through here, this part of Focus 580, of course, we'll just keep on taking calls. This is a show that we do once a month. We start in the spring and go to the early fall with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And if you have questions on lawn and garden care, give us a call, 333-9455. Or the toll-free 800-222-9455. Next, we'll go to a caller in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Yes, this is a call from a confessed mulberry killer. it works. If you, I had and have groves of mulberries cut, and as soon we have one person cut and the other person brush begone, whatever the stuff is. That's not the particular name of what I've used. And the stumps will last maybe about a year, but nothing comes
out
of
that.
It really does a good job. So you just have to find the appropriate stuff. And, I mean, I really would recommend a two-person team. Cut and
a team. It's probably a good way to do it. You're absolutely right, because you don't want that surface to dry.
No,
so.
Not at all.
So that is probably. So, yeah. Do you hire out? Maybe you can. The gentleman from Farmer City can hire you.
That's my son and the chainsaw and myself.
Okay, there you go.
That's an IP.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much. I guess I don't know if we need to remind people, but maybe it's a good idea just to remember that anytime you're dealing with one of these non-specific herbicides, you got to be careful, because if you get it on, whatever you get it on, if it does its thing, it'll kill it. So if you're trying to, that's why it's difficult. If you have something that you want and right next to it is something that you don't want, you got to be very careful. Don't get it on the plant that you want, or else
that's
you could
point.
Really damage it.
Right. And always read the label and use it according to label directions. And the labels have a lot of info on there if you just take the time to read it. And the first time you read it, don't have that be the first time you're actually using it. Right. I mean, spend a little time beforehand and read the label even before you purchase it.
Yeah. Right. Let's see. Next, we'll talk with someone in Downs, and that's line number four. Hello.
Hello. This is a two-question day, it seems like. I have started seeds inside for the first time, and they're doing very well. And I have one of those flimsy greenhouse kind of things with the plastic cover. You know what I'm talking about? Selling now. And I have it out on the south side of the house. Can I just move the seedlings right into there? Or do I have to do the in and out, you know, thing, even though they're going into something kind of sheltered?
Yeah. And what seeds have you started, or are they?
Vegetables mainly. I've got tomatoes and peppers.
Oh,
I don't mean this minute.
Well, it's one of those things that if you had something like something that's fairly cold tolerant, I'm thinking like broccoli and some of those things, then I'd say, yeah, you can probably stick them out there and not have to worry about them too much. But things like tomatoes and peppers really don't take cold very well. So
no,
that,
I'm not talking about doing it right now. I'm just saying at the point at which you start hardening them off.
Right, you should be able to do that. Now, if it's a really, really bright, sunny day, I'd be a little bit concerned if it's on the south side. I don't know if there's any way to shade them a little bit.
I can move it, you know.
Yeah, it might be the, especially for that first week or so, I think I would probably put it in a little bit of shade. And then I assume there's some way to let some of the heat out, because that's the other problem.
Yeah, they have zippers.
Okay, because that would be the other problem is that, boy, when the sun comes out, it's those things will really cook things. So you'd really have to be careful with that. So it might be a little easier to regulate the temperature by putting in a little bit of shade, too.
Okay.
But you should be fine. As long as they don't go through, you know, if it's not real cold at night, that's going to be your biggest thing with those.
Yeah, and but you don't have to go through the taking them out for a few hours and bringing them back in.
No. I'd say if you put them in the shade and then you just watch the temperature, I think you'll be fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the other question is, I think, a bigger question. I have a perennial bed in my front yard that has gone bad.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
No,
but I just said
you should.
Perennial's gone bad. It's going to be on Cops next time.
You know, it's the purple coneflowers have taken over.
Gotcha.
But I don't know how to handle sort of reviving it. There's everything in there from peonies to chrysanthemums.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the whole thing needs to be dug up. The soil, you know, is reverting to clay. And I just don't know how to go about it.
Well, I think you may find you really have to be a little tough about it, number one, is because this was kind of, we could have a little therapy group, because I was one of those people that, you know, if there was a little seedling, I didn't dare kill it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm the same, I was the same way. But unfortunately, you end up with what you have, is that if you let every little seedling come up, suddenly you have this mass of something that you're not necessarily real happy with. So a couple things. I would, you know, you can decide kind of which plants you want to keep, and I would go ahead and just sort of dig those up, put them off to the side somewhere, and sort of decide on those. All the rest of them, either give them to your neighbors, put them in the compost pile, or just realize sometimes they have to go.
I think it's more of a timing thing than anything. I mean, if I dig everything now, then I don't know what I'm doing to the peonies. Now, obviously, they, you know, if I dug them, they're not going to, and you know, replanted, and they're probably not going to bloom, but and the irises, and, you know, I mean, do I just sort of bite the bullet and just decide some time of the year I'm just going to do it?
Well, I think what I would do, is, to be honest with you, I think the peonies, I would, if any way you can, those would be the only ones that I would wait and not move them now. They really don't do well with spring moving.
Okay.
If you could wait till September on those and just realize that's something I'm going to do later. Everything else you could do right now. I mean, just dig them up and start playing around and move things around and give them to your neighbors and whatever. And then once you get them out, then you can just go ahead and put compost in there, work it in, and then start putting those plants back where you want them.
Okay.
And then the good news is, if you're a gardener and you're a collector like me, then you have all this open space so you can go shopping. So this is a good thing. This is fun. I love open space. You can buy all new plants and stuff. Yeah. So this will be fun.
You've been very encouraging.
Thank you.
You'll be happy with it. Just spend the time. I think you'll find you'll be much happier with
it. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. We will go on here. The next caller is in Aurora, and that's line number 3. Hello.
Well, now I know it's really spring. Sandy is back. Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
I love that woman's expression, and I'm going to use it. I just bit the bullet on a situation that I have. Let me explain my situation and my solution and see how worthy my solution is. I have about a raspberry patch that's about 20 by 20 feet that has been totally, totally invaded with garlic weed and wild morning glories. So I have decided that as far as I can reach in, I'm going to plant strawberry plants as far as I can get in as a beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the raspberries bloom, after the raspberries have all been eaten, I'm going to cut the patch down and weed it. And I will have been weeding it all along.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then hoping that the strawberry plants will be a challenge for the garlic weed and the wild morning glory.
Yeah.
Where are the flaws in that plant?
Well, I mean, I think you have the right idea in that trying to get things to sort of out-compete each other. I've always thought that's a good way, you know, put all the competitors together and let them fight it out. So that's not necessarily a bad thing because you're kind of shading the soil and then hopefully the weed seeds won't germinate quite as much. I think you will find, especially with morning glory and some of those, boy, if they get a little head above the strawberry, they're out of here. I mean, they're gone. They're, you know,
the
taken off. And
won't win?
I'm afraid, you know, I think you're going to find that the morning glories are just, unless you're really, really diligent and try to get them out so they don't get a little head above them. But the minute they start getting a little light, they're taken off. So I think you may have a bit of a problem with that. But
I didn't weed as thoroughly as I should have. You know, I realize that. Well, I can see I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's so visible. So so I'll call you again, and I'll tell you if that succeeded.
Very
my
good.
Other plant,
let me know.
What do strawberries like that'll make them grow real strong? What can I put in the soil?
Well, you can certainly fertilize them. I mean, any
with
kind
what?
Of.
Yes, what?
Well, you could use like 10-10-10 or any of that kind of thing, or even compost, something like that, some organic matter, that'll be good. But I think the other thing is.
Mushroom compost.
You know, I've had mixed reviews on that, to be honest with you.
I'm glad you said that.
Mixed reviews. Yeah, some of them I think is a little bit too hot. It hasn't decomposed enough.
And the stuff just bolts.
Yeah, I've had a few people complain about that, but then other people say they really like it. So I think it has to do with how composted the stuff from the mushrooms are.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
Yeah, I think there's a little difference.
And what about a box elder stump that's about 3 inches high and 32 inches round? Is there anything new in getting rid of that, or how can I? Is there any method I can use to use that as something as a growing place? Can I put anything around it to grow, like tomato plants, which will fall onto the stump and grow?
Oh, just to sort of cover it up?
Yes,
kind of
yes.
thing. I suppose you could. I don't know. You know, with that size, I'm sure they probably grow just fine around it. I assume there's plenty of other soil space that they wouldn't have a problem growing around it. If you're just trying to cover it up, that would probably work.
I just don't know what to do with it, and I hate to spend the $100 that it'll cost to get it out.
Yeah, it'll decompose eventually. And if you can put a little more soil on the top of it or something to sort of help it decompose, that sometimes helps.
Oh, and talking about things that have taken over your garden, every time I give somebody some of my oriental poppies, they say they can't make them grow, and all I can think is that hasn't happened yet in my yard. Anybody that wants oriental poppies, come in August. Bye-bye.
Yeah, yeah, good luck on your weed problem. Yeah. That is tough, and sometimes it's really just like the lady was talking about with the perennial bed. Sometimes you just, again, have to sort of bite the bullet and say, I'm just going to renovate the whole thing. I'm going to dig up those plants that I can't, because then you can get rid of that soil that's around them, and because a lot of times that has all the seeds in it, all the weed seeds, and so sometimes you can sort of do some renovations and find that you're much better off in the long run rather than fighting it year after year after year.
Okay, let's go to the next caller, and that will be Champagne, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I have a question about pruning mugo pines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the mugos are about, I don't know, maybe 3.5 feet, 4 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And when's the good time to prune them, and how? They've just grown up too tall. They're right like at an entryway. Mm-hmm. And the concern is that maybe somebody would be able to, you know, it's not maybe such a safe situation to have that shrub there like that. Are they prunable?
Yeah, the tough thing is, and unfortunately, mugo pines get much bigger than what people think they're going to get. So often they're really not necessarily good foundation plants. So that's, I guess, neither here nor there for your situation.
Yeah,
but if anybody's thinking about them as a foundation plant, realize they actually can get very large.
Yes, I'm not sure exactly what variety the mini ones.
obviously not the mini ones. Well, really the thing you can do, and usually it's in June or so, is that about the only thing you really can do is to cut back the cans. candles, and those candles are those new shoots, and you can cut those as, back as much as 2/3, and so you can get it smaller that way, but unfortunately, it almost sounds like that's not going to do it for you.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm going to have you can, to just prune out some branches.
Yeah, you may have, that's what I was going to say, you can do some selective pruning and find that sometimes you can actually just go down to the next, where the next branch is coming out, and do some, you know, just do some pruning here and there, and you might find you can get a little bit smaller that way. It's probably going to open up for you. You know, it'll be a much more open plant,
but
you may
June
find
is the time to trim that.
Right, usually it's in June. You want the candles to still be somewhat flexible.
So just,
you know,
past the candle growth, the new growth, or
actually you're just going to trim back the candle.
Okay.
So trim it back as much as 2/3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And now I have another question about rhododendrons.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a small leaf rhododendron, and it's the leaves have a real mottled appearance to it. One, there's a couple of them, and planted at the same time, same variety. And one seems to be dying, and I notice that the other rhododendron is having the same problem on the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
They're turning a mottled color, kind of tannish, reddish. They just look sick.
Mm-hmm.
So is that like something that I could bring a sample into the extension office, or the plant clinic doesn't open until May?
Right. But no, you certainly can take it into, are you here in Champaign-Urbana?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You certainly can bring it into our office, and we'll be glad to try to figure out what it is, because sometimes they have problems. Sometimes it's just the soil's not acidic enough, and that causes a lot of other problems. Or they certainly have some problems with root rots, stem rots. They like well-drained soil, but they'd like it to be moist. So their rhododendrons are just, boy, you just have to find that right spot for them.
Okay.
Or
so
they,
should I bring a sample, a soil sample and a sample of the leaf?
Well, you really don't need to bring a soil sample. That might be something you want to do later on, get a soil test done. We don't do soil tests, but that might be something you want to do. But certainly bring in like a stem section with the leaves attached, and we'll see.
Your office is located?
We're at 801 North Country Fair Drive. They're on the west end of town.
Okay.
They're in Champaign.
I know where that's at.
Okay, great.
All right, well, great. Thanks so much.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Next is Bloomington, Illinois, line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question. I'm interested in planting an American elm tree, and if you would have an opinion on what variety would be best. I'll just hang up. I'm almost out of power on my phone.
Uh-oh. Right. Okay, there is a new one, and I'm trying to think of what it's called. There is a new one that's supposed to be blight-resistant. And for the life of me, I can't think of what the name is. I don't know whether it's Sentry or... There is a new one. I would definitely look for one that is resistant to the Dutch elm disease. And so that's what you want to look for. And there is a new one out there. And unfortunately, I'm having a mind meld here, and I just can't think of what it is. But I'm sure if you ask for it, that would be one of them. And it seems to, so far, it seems to be doing pretty good as being resistant. So we'll see. But so they're beautiful trees. And I think if this truly ends up being resistant, which it sounds like it will be, I think that'll be a good start.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry I can't help you with that. But if you can call me at the extension office, I'd be glad to look that up and get you the answer for that.
Okay. Belgium is next. Line number 4. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. My discussion with you is not going to be exactly lawn and garden, but it's similar. I own a piece of property that I live on that is being reclaimed from an old farm. Okay, it's a little bottom land. And we're trying to let it go back to nature. Unfortunately, I've got a pest that makes mulberries look just friendly. And that's multifloral rose.
Yeah.
Guy that brought that into the United States should be hung and quartered.
Yeah, well.
Oh, it's horrible. Not only does it not kill easily, but it's full of thorns.
Yeah, well, I know.
And the Japanese beetles don't seem to mind that rose. Don't like that rose at all.
Can you believe it? It's just not fair, is it?
Not fair at all.
It's not fair.
I've cut it down. I mow it sometimes. But, you know, not wanting to mow all the other indigenous plants.
Right.
And I don't want to poison everything. You have any better idea?
Well, depending on the size of the plant, if it's halfway, the soil is halfway moist, you can, they actually pull out fairly easily if they're small enough. Now, the big ones, you obviously can't do that, but the small ones actually pull out fairly easily.
Well, the ones I have are probably 15, 20 feet in diameter.
Probably not going to be pulling those out, are you?
Well, I thought maybe I might, if I could put a chain around it,
you could
pull
do,
it out with a chuck.
Sure. They seem to have, like a lot of roses, they fairly, it's not real fibrous, it's just lots of roots. And so they seem to pull out if the soil is halfway moist. So
and
you
they,
may find that would work for you.
And they grow fast.
Yes, they grow very fast. And unfortunately, just cutting them off doesn't really help. It, I mean, it keeps down seed production, but it doesn't really help you. They come back anyway.
Yes,
so, and unfortunately, it is one of those things that you may decide that you want to go ahead and use an herbicide again. You know, you would use it on the cut surface or just, you know, just on that plant, and it'd have to be very selective pruning, and it would take a little time, but it can be done.
Yeah, I've got a few acres of it, and I,
yeah.
It makes it tough.
Well, but what you may find is that maybe you can take care of those bigger ones that you're really having a hard time, and then the other ones, as you mow, obviously, you're at least keeping down seed production, which really does help.
Well,
it really does help.
I don't mow the whole place. I just mow them.
So oh, you just mow them.
I just mow them because I want all the other.
Right. Oh, I know. That's the problem.
Natural things come
yeah,
up.
Yeah. So either you're going to have to, you know, dig them out or use a selective herbicide on those. So
one other question. Has the new American chestnut, they've got a chestnut hybrid that they're talking about bringing into production.
Mm-hmm.
Has it reached where you can buy them yet?
You know, I have not seen that, to tell you the truth. But I'm with you. I've heard that it is going to be available, and I'm not sure that I've seen that. Again, I'd probably have to do a little check-in to find out for sure.
Well, I think it's from Purdue. People in Purdue have been doing a lot of work with it, but I don't know if it's available yet at all. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. It should be very close. If it's not available, it should be very close because they've been talking about it for a number of years.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We have about 10 minutes left in this first hour of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. It's our monthly lawn and garden care program, so we'll try to get in as many people as we can and go on to the next, and that's Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of questions, as everyone else has had. Number one, we are thinking of planting a forsythia bush in on the northeast corner of our property, and didn't know if that would be enough sun. You know, it gets good morning sun, but you know, then it's overshadowed by the house.
Mm-hmm. It would probably be all right. Is it at least getting maybe 5-6 hours during the summertime?
Yeah, pretty much the morning till about maybe 1 o'clock.
Yeah, so. Actually, it probably should do fine there. To be honest with you,
fine there.
Yeah, that'll be enough sun. It just make sure you get one of them that says it will truly flower.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some of them that just have not. I ended up with one that I'm ready to rip out, and they supposedly it was one that. That truly was supposed to flower, and I had one flower on it this year. One flower. So that one's probably...
So is there a certain variety then we should...
I think there's one... boy, I just did an article for the News Gazette on this, and I think there's one called Northern Sun. I think Meadowlark might be another one.
Okay.
But there's a number of them out there, but when you go to your local garden center, just ask them that you absolutely want one that has to flower.
Okay,
or
if it doesn't flower, then it just looks green, or...
Yeah, they just look green, and they're not terribly pretty shrubs, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
So I would, or you might, right now would be a good time to go buy one.
Is it good to plant one now?
Sure, and you could see, they're probably in bloom, or on their way out from blooming or something.
You could actually see what's going on with it.
Right, so you could actually see that, yes, it indeed is blooming. So that's good. That's a good sign.
Okay. The other question is with some, we had some lilac offshoots that we kind of took out. Last year, and we put them in pots, and we kind of kept them over the winter, and now we're just wondering, is this a good time to replant them? We totally didn't think about it.
Sure. I would go ahead and replant them.
So that would be okay?
Wherever you want them. Uh-huh.
Okay. And then the last one is our hibiscus. It just got lots of yellow leaves, turned brown, and we've cut it down to maybe about 3 or 4 inches high.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, we went on trips, and it was in the basement. We shouldn't have left it in the basement, and we brought it back up into full sun in the front of the house and all. But it just got really woody on the stems.
Uh-huh.
And now it looks like the bottom part. We kind of tried to get down to the bottom part. And I don't know, is there anything you might suggest we do with it now?
Well, I think the biggest thing, I assume you're talking about the tropical one.
It had kind of glossy leaves.
Yeah, that's the tropical one.
It is, okay.
Yeah. And that's fine. And it could, you know, it'll be fine. I think, unfortunately, they don't like drought very well. So if it dried out too much, the leaves will yellow and fall off. They do get some problems with spider mites and scale. So they do get a few insect problems that might also cause the leaves to yellow and fall off. So I think at this point, I would just keep it in a warm spot. You might go ahead and fertilize it. I think that'd be a good thing. And then just once it's finally time that you can put them outside, like mid-May, then I'd probably put it outside.
So any particular kind of fertilizer or just the basic food stuff?
I'd probably go with something like 5-10-10 or something that's a little lower in nitrogen. But
okay. And just encourage that. Okay.
Yeah, and I would encourage that new growth to come out because we're getting enough light now, and just keep it in a warm spot and it should leave out.
Front picture window.
Yeah, there you go.
As much sun as it can. Okay, well, great. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And we'll go next to Savoy, line one. Hello.
Hi, I hope that I haven't asked you this question before in this venue or another.
I've slept since then, so I probably won't remember.
Okay, good. I'm trying to grow some vegetation over what is a driveway, over brick pavers. Mm-hmm. And I've seen advertised in some of the landscape architecture type magazines that I can't find right now, material that it looks like grass when you look at it, but it sits on top of something else and it allows you to park a boat or park an RV or other cars on this, what looks like part of your lawn, but is actually backed up with some very heavy material of some sort underneath. In other words, the grass doesn't die. And there's also steppables, mother of thyme or creeping thyme. Mm-hmm. And then there's also moss. And I was wondering, how do I get moss started? Alternatively, do you know of what this material might be that is basically some type of turf that grows naturally but doesn't pass away with vehicles on top of it?
Wow, I'm not sure what the turf would be. I mean, around here, probably some of our more durable turf would probably something be like tall fescue or something like that. It tends to be fairly durable and doesn't need a lot of maintenance stuff, but still you'd have to mow it periodically. So I'm not sure exactly what they're talking about unless they're, you know, somehow talking about zoysia grass or something like that. I'm not sure which I probably wouldn't recommend around here some because it's still brown right now. I mean, it's really very slow to warm up. Or green up. As far as some of the other plant kinds of things, thyme is fine, but it doesn't really spread like you might like it to. This is a big area, you may find you want something else. I think I'd probably think about moss would be fine if it's a shady spot. I assume it is.
No, it's open.
Oh, then you're going to have trouble with moss, okay. To be honest with you. They really need shade because they need a certain amount of moisture and stuff. So I think you're going to have a tough time with moss.
Okay.
So as far as other things that you could, like, a drive over, wow.
Steppables.
Yeah, some of the steppables I've actually had really good. But you are going to be driving over it.
Not a whole lot, but, okay. I mean, the cars will go in and out.
Every day?
Every day.
Yeah.
Not throughout the day, but just once in the morning.
I think they're called steppables. I don't think they're called drivables. So some of those may not do all that well for you. Because I think they would take a little traffic once in a while, but regular traffic, I think you're going to have a hard time with it, to be honest with you. You might have, if you're really wanting something, I would think, you know, even something like the vinca vine, something like that, you could probably drive over and not have a problem.
Can you repeat that, please?
The vinca, are you familiar with vinca? Some people call it periwinkle. It's just a viney thing.
Vinca drive.
Yeah, it's a vine. It's a vine, and it just kind of takes off, and it's pretty tough stuff. And once you got it established, I think it would probably take it better than some of those steppables would, to be honest with you. If you don't want turf, I think I'd still probably even think about something like tall fescue or one of the turfs, to be honest with you.
Okay.
It'd probably be cheaper in the long run.
What was that real sturdy turf that you said is still brown?
Zoysia.
Zoysia?
Yeah. It's a warm season grass, so it doesn't green up until like May. And so it's still brown right now. And
it's almost like golf course putting green type.
It's not the same thing. It is kind of that in the sense that it's a fairly thick turf and tends to be a little spongy. You know, it might remind you of that. It's not quite the same thing. But
in parts of my yard from a previous owner.
Oh, well, it could very well be. And it tends to be very vigorous grass. Certainly in the hot part of the season, it's much more vigorous than Kentucky bluegrass or any of the other grasses.
So zoysia.
Yeah, zoysia is what it's called. Yeah.
And is that a variety that is native to the area, or?
No, that's just one you would purchase. Normally, you purchase it as plugs. You normally wouldn't purchase it as seeds, and then just plant the plugs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right,
good luck. That's an interesting question.
I think we're about here. I'm sorry to say we're going to have to stop. My apologies to the people we can't take. I would remind you, though, if you're within the range of our television station, WILL-TV, there is a program that you can tune to every week. It's called Illinois Gardener, and it's on Thursday nights at 7. They discuss same kinds of topics here, and there is the possibility to call in with questions, so you might want to check that out. And then coming up this weekend, it's Mom's Day weekend.
Yes, it sure is.
And it's the Flower Show. 49th year this thing
has
been going.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Almost as old as we are.
Yeah, or speak for yourself, sir. No, so it's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and it runs 8 to 5 on Saturday, 8 to 3 on Sunday. And it's a great opportunity to see, you know, what the horticulture students come up with. And they always have these wonderful designs and great places to sort of look at all these different plants. And you get to buy plants. So it's a great opportunity. It's at the Stock Pavilion on the U of I campus. So,
okay.
And it's free. Walk in. Have fun.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It. Sandy Mason's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's, for now, the next several months, she'll be here every month on the second Tuesday. We'll do this show. And then, again, do tune into Illinois Gardener. That's another opportunity to ask questions and get information about things that grow in the home landscape. That's on WILL-TV, Thursday nights at 7.